According to this questioner, at last night's session in Whitefield, you carefully evaded the question as to whether you ever directly talked with the New Hampshire Department of Transportation about the possibility of full burial using the I-93 or other interstate corridor and with the parties to the Franconia Notch Interstate Settlement. So we will try again tonight. Number one, have you ever requested a conversation with all of the principals to that settlement?
No. And I think Mr. Hodgson answered these questions last night, but I think on that point he was very clear.
Have you ever made a similar official request with the Department of Transportation to use the I-93 and other interstate corridors for a burial option?
Turn this over to Mr. Hodgson.
The question, can you just read that again, just to make sure I'm answering?
Have you made a similar official request with the New Hampshire Department of Transportation to use the I-93 and other interstate corridors for a burial option? I think what the questioner is trying to find out is, did you make an official request to use I-93 to bury under I-93 or any other interstate corridor?
Not to parse things, but the only official request we've made for DOT is the application we filed for the routes that are proposed. We have had consultations for years with DOT that led up to that, and we were well aware of their policies and rules, which they told us any application would have to comply with.
And the third part of that question is, if you have had such conversations, if so, when, with whom, and what were their responses?
They go back years. I couldn't give you the dates. And I can only tell you that they were with those parties at the DOT who are designated by DOT to be responsible for reviewing any future application.
And I will just add on this point, I think the company's view about the feasibility of using Interstate 93 is now formal. It's been filed with the Department of Energy, and it's available to the public for review.
Okay. This next thing goes back to a question you were asked earlier, Mr. Quinlan. Some of it you've already answered, but there are portions of it that are new, so I'm going to read the whole question. At earlier public hearings, Northern Pass has stated that the cost of fully burying the project would be an additional $1 billion. Your answer on how you came to that conclusion was, according to the questioner, an admittedly simplistic back-of-the-envelope calculation. Can you or will you provide more detailed engineering plans and cost estimates that would justify that your numbers on full burial are even close to reasonable? And can you explain why your cost estimates appear much higher than the terrestrial burial cost estimates derived for similar projects in New York and Vermont?
I can't speak to other projects in New York and Vermont. Every project is different. We feel very comfortable with the estimate that we've come up with. I explained its derivation. It is fairly straightforward and simple. It is, however, based upon many projects that we have built as a company or that have been built by the contractors with whom we are working. So it's straightforward, but it's grounded in experience.
Is it your intention to provide more detailed engineering plans or cost estimates?
No.
Next question. The I-93 right-of-way, including Franconia Notch, has not been explained as to why it cannot be utilized. Will the applicant be more specific? Well, actually, there are two separate questions, I think. The first question is about I-93 right-of-way, including Franconia Notch. And the questioner is asking as to why it cannot be utilized. I guess the Franconia Notch highway.
Yeah, so Franconia Notch is a particularly, obviously, sensitive portion of the Interstate 93. The reasons why that is not feasible are spelled out in great detail in this filing that we just made with the Department of Energy. Again, that's available to the public. I believe it may be posted to our website at this point, but it's certainly available in the Department of Energy's public record. And we'd be happy to make it available upon request.
Okay. Okay, the next question is, I don't know if it refers to the first one or not, because it could mean more than just the I-93 right-of-way, but will the applicant be more specific regarding, quote, best practices, close quote, as the process moves along?
Just for clarity, best practices in the context of the use of public highway or utility best practices, or?
Why don't you address both, because I'm not sure what the questioner asks. You know, if it's best practices with respect to burial under the highways and then best practices for utilities.
As you might imagine, with regard to the public roads, first, for those that are local roads, we are applying DOT standards. The municipalities involved don't have a set of standards, so we are applying DOT standards because they're more rigorous. With regard to the DOT process, DOT, as you might imagine, has a very rigorous and set practice with regard to use of its highways and roads, and we will be complying fully with that, and that will include both a traffic control plan and what's called a traffic management plan. They're slightly different. We will also be applying all their construction standards, including depths and offsets that are detailed in their manual, and we will be complying fully with those. With regard to the traffic control plan, those will be well in accordance with accepted practices and will be governed by DOT.
There are a variety of other best practices that would apply to the overhead and underground portions of this line as well. Some of them would include the vegetation management on rights of way, the operations and maintenance of the overhead transmission line, the operations and maintenance of the underground transmission line, various soil and erosion control measures taking place in and around wetlands, to name a few. There are probably many more that can be provided, and I think some of them have been provided in the pre-file testimony for the application under Jerry Fortier's name.
So next is kind of a long question. It references a story that was entitled Sugar Hill, Franconia, Northern Pass Tax Pitch Met with Skepticism, and it states that this story was published in the Orleans Record on October 20th, 2015, and it quotes from the story to say, North Country Community Outreach Specialist Scott Mason, and the questioner indicates that he was a Northern Pass spokesman, said if the town signed on to a 20-year tax agreement that would assess Northern Pass property the way the company wants it, it will agree not to sue the towns during that time period to reduce its taxes. The question goes on to quote, that agreement uses the net book method of assessment minus an annual 2.5% in depreciation, a straight line depreciation formula that would run the value of Northern Pass property to half in 20 years and to zero in 40 years. My question is, are Mr. Mason's statements about lawsuits still true?
So I believe what Mr. Mason was referring to is discussions we've been having with many municipalities around certainty around tax revenues in the future from the project. I shared with you earlier some ranges which are illustrative for these communities. The straight line depreciation method referred to in that story, along with the net book value concept, is one that's widely accepted in the utility industry across the country. It's one that we feel very comfortable with, and we are making representations to communities hosting this line that, assuming we're taxed using that methodology, we will provide certainty around the taxes in the form of a pledge, meaning we would not seek to abate taxes if they were derived using that methodology. And it's really intended to get municipalities comfortable with what that revenue stream might look like, and it uses an industry accepted practice.
Next part of the question, is it true that the net book method of assessment results in having halving the value in 20 years and zeros it in 40?
There are other variables, such as, that assumes that there are no additions or additional investment in the capital infrastructure. So if it's installed and it's never touched for 40 years, that's a long-lived asset. So its depreciation schedule is, in fact, 40 years. That would be the effect absent capital upgrades or improvements to the line.
Next part of the question, what is the currently published approximate total of Northern Pass's tax revenues to all affected New Hampshire towns over the 40-year life of this power line project?
Yeah, so we've evaluated it over the first 20 years. It's approximately $30 million a year. So in essence, $600 million over the first 20 years. We have not run it out for the full 40-year period.
Using the net book method of assessment, what will be the approximate total of Northern Pass's tax revenues to all affected New Hampshire towns over the same 40-year life of this power line project?
I think I just answered that. We've not run it out for the full 40-year life. We've done a 20-year depreciation schedule, which is what we've been sharing with municipalities.
Okay. Next question has to do with economics. Will Hydro-Québec give Eversource money if this project does not go through?
Jim?
I guess we have contractual arrangements between us, and there's obviously in any contract there's going to be breakup and termination fees under different circumstances. Short answer, yes, but we're not really at liberty to discuss that.
Is it true that New Hampshire makes more electricity than it uses?
So New Hampshire is part of the regional grid. It's almost irrelevant where a physical generation plant is sited. There's one market for this region. There's one grid. All of these plants feed that grid in that market. So, the physical location of the plant really is largely irrelevant for purposes of this.
It may be irrelevant, but do they produce more electricity in New Hampshire than we actually consume?
It varies dramatically on a day-to-day basis. If you looked at...
Please let him finish his answer.
Yeah, so it does vary dramatically day to day, depending on which plants have been dispatched for that particular day. And again, that's an hourly decision made by the grid operator. Now, if you added all the generation capacity that exists in New Hampshire and you assumed it was all running, more power is generated in New Hampshire than customers consume.
What will be the 1 year profit to Northern Pass if the project is built?
It's approximately $80 to $90 million in the first year, and that declines over time as the asset is depreciated.
This question is about the 2.5% depreciation of power lines. According to Eversource, for tax payments to the town. Why does my 30-year-old house appraised value go up every 5 years, 5 years per fair market value, and why don't the towers go up similarly?
Again, it's a industry accepted practice for depreciating any asset. And it's based upon an assumption around the useful life of the asset. That's the way it's done commonly in the industry.
Okay, another
Just follow up on that. If your house were an investment property, which all utility property is an investment that we make, it would also depreciate.
Next question is back to the COAS loop. Is there an estimate of the cost of upgrading the COAS loop? And are those costs included in the $200 million forward New Hampshire funds?
So there is not a detailed cost estimate at this point. As I said earlier, the final requirements are going to be determined by consultation with the independent system operator. Can you repeat the second half of that question?
Are those costs included in the $200 million forward New Hampshire funds?
The current scope that we're envisioning is anticipated to be paid for through the project, not through the forward New Hampshire fund. There may be some additional funding requirements, and we may look to the forward New Hampshire fund to support that. I'll give you a sense. These upgrades are tens of millions of dollars. These are not inexpensive upgrades. That's why it hasn't been done previously, because the generators who would have to pay for it have found it to be cost prohibitive. This is an opportunity to make that investment through this project.
Are you including that $200 million in the $1.6 billion project cost?
No. No, the $200 million is not part of the capital investment in the infrastructure. It's, in essence, an ongoing expense of the project.
Okay, I think we have some questions regarding Forward New Hampshire, and then some other miscellaneous questions, it looks like. I have been told that New Hampshire would not receive any of the electricity from the Northern Pass project. Is this true? If it is true, how can Northern Pass make the claim that Northern Pass will save New Hampshire residents $80 million per year?
Okay, so really two questions there. The first question is, how does Northern Pass drive down energy costs? And there are really two effects. The first is Northern Pass, which is a economic and significant new supply, pushes down the wholesale price of electricity for customers across New England. New Hampshire's share of that is approximately $80 million a year. How does it do that? Bear with me for 1 minute, but in essence, customers across New England demand a certain amount of electricity every hour. The independent system operator dispatches generation units across the region until the supply meets the demand. By putting Northern Pass into that bid stack, and it's a very cost-effective way of doing it, you're pushing off less economic, generally fossil fuel-fired plants. Now, the interesting thing about that bid stack is that last unit to supply customers' needs sets the price for all of the generation. So if you're pushing off less economic units, the price for all customers and all units goes down. Okay, so that effect is $80 million a year for New Hampshire, approximately $800 million a year in energy cost savings for all of New England. That's effect number one. Separate and apart from that, we do anticipate having a power purchase agreement with Hydro-Québec for 10% of the power flowing over this line. And we do anticipate through that to have additional savings for New Hampshire customers. So not only will we be entitled to 10% of the power, but we'll get the associated energy cost savings and environmental attributes for that portion of the power flowing over the line.
Okay, the next question is similar. It makes reference to the $80 million of annual savings mentioned in the overview video. And the question is, how exactly will that come about? Define in detail how the project will provide such energy savings for New Hampshire. Do you have anything to add to the last
No, it's essentially the effect on the wholesale market price. It drives it down in its entirety. Those benefits flow throughout New England.